The whole planet had become a flat and uniform gray, clouds obscuring whatever violence was happening beneath them. After the exercise round, he bathed, changed into a fresh uniform, and went to his office. His incoming message queue was filled with requests for comments from every news organization there was, and several he doubted were real. He forwarded them all to the RCE corporate headquarters on Luna. Let them answer if they wanted to. At this point, they knew as much as he did. He checked on comms from the planet, but the signal wasn't getting through. So he checked again, and again. The gray planet was silent. "Any word?" the prisoner asked. "Nothing," Pavlok replied, and then a moment later, "I'm sorry." "Me too," she said. "They'll be all right." "I hope so. Are you all right?" Pavlok looked over at her. For a detained saboteur who'd been in the box for days now, she looked calm, almost amused. He found himself smiling back at her. "Might be a little stressed," he said. "Yeah, sorry about that." "Not your fault," Pavlok said. "You aren't the one calling the shots around here." "There's someone calling the shots around here?" Naomi asked, and a man cleared his throat behind him. Pavlok shifted his couch, the bearing hissing, to look back at the hatch. The chief engineer floated there. He wore the militia armband over his uniform sleeve. "Hey there, chief," he said, pulling himself into the room. "Wondering if we could have a talk. Alone, maybe." "You can put up the privacy shield if you want," Naomi said. "I'll still hear everything." Pavlok undid his straps and pushed off. "I'll be back," he said over his shoulder. "You shall always find me at home," Naomi said. The commissary was between rushes. The chief engineer grabbed a bulb of coffee for himself and another for Pavlok. They floated together near a table bolted to the deck. Force of habit. "So, we've been talking," Chief Engineer Kunin said, "about the event."
"Yeah, it's been pretty much the only thing on my mind, too.
How sure are we that it's, well, natural?"
"I'd have gone pretty much 100% it wasn't," Pavlok said with a grim laugh.
The Chief Engineer's expression seemed to close, and Pavlok pressed on.
"But maybe that depends on what you mean by natural. Is there something bothering you?"
"I don't want to sound paranoid. It's just that the timing on this seems pretty convenient.
You and me and the boys catch the UN mediator red-handed, throw the bitch in the brig, and then this big disaster comes out of nowhere. Takes everyone's attention off her."
Pavlok sipped at the coffee. "What are you thinking, Chief? That it was rigged?"
"Those squatters got here before we did. We don't know what they found and just never told us about. And Holden worked for the OPA. He worked for Fred fucking Johnson, right? Hell, everything I heard says he's been sleeping with that Belter girl we brought in. His loyalty isn't to Earth. And he was the one who went on the alien, whatever the hell it is, that Medina Station's floating around and came back out. I've been following some independent casts. The Martian Marines that went there after him? There's some pretty weird shit that's gone on with all of them since then."
"Weird shit like what?"
The chief engineer's eyes brightened and he hunched forward, a posture of intimacy and complicity that was a habit of gravity. For the next half hour, he ran down half a dozen strange occurrences. One of the Marines had died of an embolism during a heavy G burn just before she'd been scheduled to talk with her cousin who ran a popular news feed. Another had quit the military and wasn't talking about anything that had happened. There had been rumors of a secret report that strongly suggested, that James Holden had been killed on the station and a doppelganger put in his place. It stood to reason, with all the other changes the protomolecule could make to a human body, that recreating one wouldn't be hard for it. Only the report had never been made public, and the people who had read it had been targets of whisper campaigns to discredit them. Havelock drank his coffee and listened, nodding and asking the occasional question, usually for sources of the information the chief engineer was reporting. When they were done, Havelock promised to look into the issue, then hauled himself back to his desk. On the readout, the planet was still covered in clouds. "Everything okay?" Naomi asked. "Fine," he said, and then a moment later, "Just scared people trying to find a version of events where someone has control over everything." She chuckled. "Yeah, I'm doing the same."
"You are? How?"
"Chewing down my fingernails and praying," she said.
"Mostly praying."
"You're religious?"
"No."
"Are you and Holden secretly alien spies that blew up the planet as part of a Belter conspiracy to distract the media?" Naomi's laughter was deep. "Oh, was that what it was? I'm so sorry." Havelock chuckled too, feeling a little guilty as he did. Kernan was one of his people. Naomi Nagata was a saboteur and the enemy. And still, it was a little funny. And there wasn't anyone else to talk with.
"It's not that bad. Conspiracy theories come up whenever people feel like the universe is too random. Absurd. If it's all an enemy plot, at least there's someone calling the shots."
"Belters?"
"This time, yeah."
"Are they going to break in here and throw me out the airlock?"
"No, they're not like that," Havelock said. "They're good guys."
"Good guys who think I destroyed a planet?"
"No, that your alien doppelganger boyfriend did to keep people from thinking about you."
"Don't worry, you'll be fine.
No one's really thinking you're in league with the protomolecule. They're just scared."
Naomi went quiet. Her fingertips pressed against the cage, and she hummed quietly to herself. It wasn't a melody Havelock knew. He checked his incoming queue again. Another half dozen requests for comment. A note from one of the security team that the Belters on the Israel had started sitting together in the commissary and exercising together in the gym. It seemed suspicious to the man making the report. It sounded like circling the wagons to Havelock. He'd have to think about what to do about that, if anything. The radio signal to the planet still didn't go through. The analysis of the IR sensors that could see through the cloud cover was that First Landing was being destroyed by the storm. He turned his attention to the sensor array data as it streamed back to Earth. Maybe someone there could make something of it. The first report news feeds were already speculating that it had been a fusion core overloading. Having just heard about how Jim Holden was a shape-shifting alien left him a little skeptical about everything. When, 6 hours later, his hand terminal lit up with an incoming request from Murtry, Havelock felt a huge weight lifting from his shoulders. He accepted the connection, and a low-res Murtry fuzzed to life on the screen. The feed jumped and hopped, but the audio quality was all right, apart from a little static.
"Good to see you, Havelock. How are things holding together up there?"
"No complaints, sir. Mostly we were waiting to hear from you. That looks like a hell of a rainstorm you've got going down there."
"Loss of life was minimal," Murtry said. "A few of the squatters didn't bother getting to shelter in time, and the floodwaters pulled some local bugs out from the ground that'll kill you if you touch them. They lost another one to that. Our people are fine. The camp's a loss. Ours are theirs. Ours and theirs. Everyone down here is going to be starting over from scratch."
"I'm sorry to hear that."
"Why?"
Havelock blinked. His smile felt nervous.
"Because we just lost everything."
"We didn't lose as much as they did," Murtry said. "That makes this a win. We're going to need to pack the shuttle with relief supplies and get it down here. Food, clean water, medical supplies, warm clothes. No shelters, though. Or if they are, make them those cheap laminate ones that won't hold up for more than a week."
"Are you sure? I can get some emergency prefabs worked up."
"No. Nothing like permanent shelter comes down here until our people are the only ones using it.
and we'll be hauling up some of the squatters. Can you start setting something up for an extra 100 or so people? It doesn't need to be comfortable, but it has to be something we can control.
We're bringing the squatters on the Israel, sir?
We're getting them off the planet and putting them under our thumbs, Murtry said with a smile. His Holiness Pope Holden thinks he bullied me into it. That man is about as smart as a dead cat.
Havelock was suddenly acutely aware that Naomi's privacy shield was down, and every word of his conversation was carrying to her. He tried to think of a way to trigger it that wouldn't let Murtry know that he'd forgotten protocol up to now.
There a problem, Havelock?
Just thinking where we can put them, sir, Havelock said. We'll come up with something.
Good man. This thing was a lucky break. Play this right and we'll get all the squatters off the planet. Even if we can't, they're going to have hell's own time claiming they've got a viable settlement.
Murtry's smile was thin.
This last 60 hours, we've probably made more progress towards straightening this mess out than all the time since we came out here.
Naomi rapped against the cage with her knuckles, the grate clacking softly enough that the hand terminal's mic didn't pick it up. Her eyebrows were raised in query, but she didn't speak. Havelock made the smallest possible nod.
What about the mediation team? He asked.
Holden and his people.
Holden and Burton are fine. Burton almost got his ass caught out in the worst of it, but it didn't quite happen, Murtry said with a shrug and a smile.
Can't have everything.
Havelock winced, thinking how callous Murtry's words would sound to someone who didn't know him.
Well, let them know we'll put together relief supplies and get them down there as soon as we can get through the cloud cover.
No permanent structures.
No, sir, I understand. I'm going to want to get some of our science team up when the shuttle goes back, too. The ones that are going a little too native. I'll work up an evac list.
Do you want me to get the, other shuttle ready to return to normal duty?
Havelock said, hoping that Murtry wouldn't tell him to keep the weapon live. There was a silence on the connection.
Sir?
We'll have to, won't we? Murtry said.
Yeah, all right. But be ready to put it back in play as soon as the evacuation's done. I don't like giving up our advantages for nothing.
No, sir, Havelock said. I'll see to it.
Good man.
The connection died. Havelock started pulling up the duty roster and inventory lists. It was almost a minute before he risked glancing over at Naomi. She looked like she'd eaten something unpleasant.
That's who you work for?
He's the chief of security, Havelock said. That man is a snake.
He just came off badly, Havelock said. He didn't know you could hear him.
If he had, he might have hissed a little different, she said. Then a moment later,
do you have any selective apoptosis catalysts on board?
Oncocytals?
Sure,
anti-cancer meds are standard.
Would you send some down on the shuttle?
I think antibiotics and clean water are more likely to-
Holden needs them.
He caught a lot of REMS on Eros. It's not a big thing when we have a med bay, but he pops a new tumor every month or two. Unless Alex decides to take the Rosi down into that soup, they may be down there for a while.
He should probably have said no. She was his prisoner, and doing her favors wasn't really part of the job. But she hadn't made it clear to Murtry that she was listening. She could have embarrassed him, and hadn't.
Sure, he said. I don't see why not.
About that dead cat thing.
Yeah?
A lot of people have underestimated Jim over the last few years, Naomi said. A lot of them aren't with us anymore.
A threat?
A heads up. Not to make the same mistake your boss is making. I like you. Putting the relief supplies together was easy. Everyone on board had been waiting for a chance to do something. Food, fresh water, polyfiber blankets, and medical supplies, including a box of oncocytals with Holden's name on the top, filled the shuttle's hold until there was hardly room to close the door. Havelock found himself watching the sensors,
waiting for the clouds to thin enough for the one tiny light of first landing to show through. It was a shock to remember that those lights weren't going to shine again, that they were gone. Havelock hadn't been there. He'd never been to the surface of New Terra at all, and still the idea of the one human settlement being wiped away bothered him. "This is Shuttle 2 requesting permission to drop," the pilot said, her voice a slow drawl. "Captain Marwick here, permission's given. Godspeed." Havelock watched his display as the shuttle's thrusters went bright, driving it away from the Israel and down. The danger was turbulence in the lower atmosphere. Even if there were evil winds in the outer layers, the air was so thin there the shuttle would be able to shrug them off. When it got down to the clouds, Havelock told himself, the real danger would begin. The shuttle dropped, its body becoming only a light spot against the darker gray of the clouds. The sensor data feed from it looked fine. The turbulence was worse than Havelock had expected, but not so bad as he'd feared. The farther down it went, though, the data signal dropped. Havelock switched over to visual in time to see the shuttle's bright flare fade. A puff of smoke a few kilometers higher showed where it had detonated. The shock of it, the horror, was like being punched in the gut. He barely noticed the flickering of the lights in the Israel or the stuttering whine of the air recyclers restarting. "Havelock," the prisoner said. "Havelock, what's happening? Did something go wrong? Why is everything rebooting?" He ignored her, leaning close to his terminal screen. The shuttle was dead, falling to the distant ground of New Terra in 100 flaming bits. But there was something in the images, a barely visible line that passed through the cloud of smoke and debris where it had died. Something had shot the shuttle down. His first thought was the Barba Piccola. His second was the Rosinante. He pulled up the orbital tracking, trying to find how the enemy ships had taken action, but the only thing that intersected the line at the moment when the shuttle died was one of New Terra's dozen tiny moons. His mouth went dry. He heard the emergency klaxon sounding for the first time, though he realized now it had been going for a while. Since the shuttle exploded, he thought, he assumed. Naomi Nagata was shouting at him, trying to get his attention, trying to get him to talk to her. He put a priority connection request through to Captain Marwick. For 5 long seconds, the captain didn't respond. "It was the planet," Havelock said. "The shuttle. It was shot down by something on one of those moons." "I saw that," Marwick said. "What the hell was it? Some kind of alien weapon? Did the planet blowing up turn on some kind of defense grid?" "Couldn't say. I need everything we have on that, all the sensor data, everything. I need it sent back to Earth and I need it ready for Murtry and the science team. I'm giving blanket permission for anyone on the crew to see it. Any information we can get, anything, is our top priority." "Might not be our top," the captain said. "My plate's a bit full right now, but as soon as I have a spare moment..." "This isn't a request," Havelock shouted. When Marwick spoke again, his voice was cool. "I'm thinking you might not have yet noted that we're on battery power, sir."
We're what?"
"On battery power. Backup, as you might say." Havelock looked around his office. It was like seeing it for the first time. His desk, the weapon locker, the cells. Naomi looking out at him with an expression of barely restrained alarm.
Did it shoot us too?"
"Not so far as I can see. No new holes through the hull, certainly."
"Then what's going on?"
"Our reactor's down," Marwick said. "And it seems it won't restart."
Chapter 33. Baja. "What does that mean?" Baja asked.
"Well,
Alex said. It's complicated, but these little pellets of fuel get injected into a magnetic bottle where a bunch of lasers fire. That makes the atoms in the fuel fuse, and it releases a lot of energy.
Are you making fun of me?
No, Alex said. Well, maybe a little. What exactly are you asking?
If our reactor is offline, does that mean we'll crash? Is the ship broken? Is it just us? What does it mean?
Hold your horses, Alex said.
He was sitting in his pilot's chair, doing complicated things with his control panel.
Yeah, he finally said, dragging the word out into a long sigh. Reactors are offline on the Israel and the Barb. That's a lot worse for them than it is for us.
Felcia, my daughter is on the Barba Piccola. Is she in danger?
Alex started working on his panel again, his fingers tapping out commands faster than Baja could follow. He clucked his tongue as he worked. The clucking, while Baja waited for an answer, made him want to scream and choke the laconic pilot.
Well, Alex drawled out, then tapped one last control, and a graphic display of Illis with swirling lines around it appeared. Yeah, the Barb's orbit is decaying.
The ship is crashing?
Baja yelled at him.
Wouldn't say crashing, but we've all been keeping pretty low, with bringing up ore and all. Most times, adding a little velocity is just the way you do it, but...
We have to go get her.
Ease down, let me finish.
Alex yelled back, patting the air in a placating gesture that made Baja want to punch him in his face.
The orbit's always decaying. But it won't be dangerous for days, maybe longer, depending on how long they can run the maneuvering thrusters on battery power. Felcia's not in any danger right now.
Let's go get her,
Baja said, taking deep breaths to keep his words calm and level.
Can we do that? Can we go to a ship without the reactor?
Sure. The Rosie's a warship. Her battery backups are robust. We can do quite a bit of maneuvering if we need to, but with the reactor down, every bit of power we pull off those batteries is gone. It ain't getting replaced. Lose too much of it to land, and we'll be in the same position as them. We're not doing anything until we make a plan. So calm down, or I'll lock you in your cabin.
Baja nodded, but didn't trust himself to speak around the rising panic in his chest. His daughter was on a spaceship that was falling out of the sky. He might never be calm again.
On top of which, Alex continued, you think everyone else on the Barb is just going to be okay with us leaving without them? We don't have room for everyone on that ship. Docking with a ship full of frightened people looking to get off is never plan A.
Baja nodded again.
But if we don't get a plan, he said.
Alex's grin went away.
We'll get your girl. If it comes to that, if we all fall out of the sky, your daughter will be on this ship when it happens. So will Naomi.
Baja's panic and anger was replaced by a feeling of shame and a sudden lump in his throat.
Thank you.
It's family, Alex said with a smile that was almost only baring his teeth. We don't let our family down.
Baja drifted through the Rosinante like a ghost. Alex was in engineering, tinkering with the reactor, trying to figure out what was causing the failure. Baja had offered to help, but Alex had declined. He couldn't blame the pilot. His ignorance of nuclear engineering and ship's systems was utter and complete. He doubted the reactor failing to work could be fixed by a really clean bead of weld. If it turned out he was wrong, Alex would call. In the meantime, Baja moved through the ship, trying to distract himself from the idea that he was slowly drifting toward the planet and a fiery death, that Felcia was too. He went to the galley and made a sandwich that he didn't eat. He went to the head and bathed with damp scrubbing pads and rub-on cleansers. He left with a few friction burns, and all the same worries he'd brought in with him. For the first time since coming to the Rosinante, he actually felt like a prisoner.
Alex had left a panel on the ops deck monitoring the other two ships. Baja could check on the Barbara Piccola as often as he liked. The pilot seemed to think that the display showing hundreds of hours before the Barb's orbit decayed enough to be dangerous would make him feel better. But Alex didn't understand. It didn't matter how long that number was. What mattered was that it was counting down. Every time Baja looked at the counter, there was less time than when he'd looked before. When he was looking at a countdown timer for the death of his child, the numbers on it were almost meaningless. He avoided looking. He returned to the galley and cleaned up the mess his sandwich preparations had made. He threw his used scrubbing pads and towels into the bin, and then went ahead and ran a cycle of laundry to clean them. He watched a children's cartoon, and then one of Alex's noir films. Afterward, he couldn't remember either. He wrote a letter to Jacek, and then deleted it. Recorded a video apology to Lucia. When he watched it, he looked like a madman, with hair flying wildly out from his skull, and sunken, haunted eyes. He deleted it. He returned to ops, telling himself that he would just double-check that nothing had changed, that the inexorable ticking of his daughter's death clock was just data to be monitored. He watched the tiny icon that represented the Barbara Piccola travel its glowing path around Illus, every passage taking it an imperceptible increment closer to the atmosphere that would kill it. Just data. No change. Just data. Tick, tick, tick. Alex Holden here, a voice blared from the communications console. Baja floated to the panel and turned on the microphone. Hello, this is Baja Merton, he said, surprised at how calm his voice sounded. Holden was calling. Holden worked for the governments of Earth and the OPA. He'd know what to do. Hi, Alex left me a message, but comms have been really spotty. He around? Baja laughed in spite of himself. I could probably find him. Great, hey, Captain, Alex said. He sounded out of breath. Sorry, it took a sec to get to the panel. I was elbows deep in the Rossi's nethers when he called. Baja reached out to turn off his speaker and let them talk, but stopped with his finger hovering millimeters over the control. This was James Holden on the line. He was probably going to be talking to Alex about the reactor shutdowns. Feeling a little like a peeping Tom, Baja left the connection on. There a problem? Holden asked. Yeah, so fusion don't work no more, Alex said, exaggerating his drawl. If that's the punchline, I don't get it. Wasn't a joke. Just yanked the reactor apart. Injector works, fuel pellets drop, laser array fires, magnetic bottle is stable. All the parts that make it a fusion reactor work just fine. Only, you know, without the fusing. God damn it, Holden said. Even Baja, who'd only just met the man, could hear the frustration in his voice. Is it just us? Nope, Alex said. We're all flying on batteries up here. How long? Well, even on batteries, I can put the Rossi up far enough we'll die of old age before she falls down, or I can slope on down planetside and park. The Israel's got maybe 10 days or so, depending on how much juice she stores. But she's also got a ton of people sucking up air, so she'll be burning through her batteries just keeping everyone warm and breathing. The Barb's worse off than that. Same problems, shittier boat. Baja's gut clenched at this casual description of his daughter's peril, but kept silent. Our creepy friend said there was a defense grid, Holden said. Their power station blew up, so the old defenses are in lockdown. They do seem to dislike big energy sources near their stuff, Alex replied. Baja had the sense they were talking about something from their past, but didn't know what it was. And we heard the supply drop was shot down, Holden said. So we've got a few hundred people down here, a bunch more up there, and we're all about to die because the planet's defenses won't let us help each other.
The Rossi's got the juice to land if you need us, Alex said.
Baja wanted to scream at him.
We can't land. My daughter's still up here.
They shot the shuttle down, Holden said. Do not risk my ship.
If we can't get supplies down to you, me and Naomi will be inheriting it pretty soon.
And until that happens, do what I tell you to do, Holden said. The words were harsh, but there was affection in them.
Roger that, Alex said.
He didn't sound offended.
You know, Holden continued, we've got what seems like an engineering problem, and the best engineer in this solar system is locked up on that other ship. Why don't you call them and point that out?
I'll do that, Alex replied.
I'll see if there's anything we can do from this end.
Miller, Alex said. Baja had no idea what that meant.
Yeah, Holden said.
You take care of yourself down there.
Affirmative. You take care of my ship.
Holden out.
Look, Alex said, not quite yelling. I've run the damn numbers. You're going down. It might take 2 weeks if you're lucky, but that ship is going to be scraping atmosphere and catching on fire.
Heard you the first time, the face on the other end said. A man named Havelock.
Alex had called him after the conversation with Holden. He'd stopped off on his way up from the engine room to don a fresh uniform and comb his thinning black hair. He looked very official. It didn't seem to impress Havelock very much.
So stop dicking me around and turn Nagata loose to help us figure this shit out, Alex said.
And that's where you lose me, Havelock replied with a tight smile. He was a compact, pale-skinned man with a military-style haircut. He radiated the self-assured physical competence carried by soldiers and professional security people. To Baja, a belter who'd lived under the thumbs of two different inner planet governments, it said, I know how to beat people up. Don't make me show you.
I don't see how, Alex started.
Yes, Havelock interrupted him. We're all going to crash if we can't get the reactors back online, I agree. What I don't get is how me releasing my prisoner fixes that.
Because, Alex said, visibly gulping as he bit the word off, X.O. Nagata is the best engineer there is. If someone is going to figure this problem out and save all of our asses, it's probably going to be her. So stop keeping the potential solution to our problem locked in your jail.
He smiled at the camera and turned off the microphone before adding, You pig-headed idiot.
I think maybe you're underestimating my engineering team, Havelock replied, still with his smug smile. But I hear what you're saying. Let me see what I can do.
Gee, that would be great, Alex said.
He somehow managed to make it sound sincere. He turned off the comm station.
You smug sack of flaming pig shit.
What do we do now? Baja asked.
The hardest thing of all. We wait.
Baja floated in a crash couch on the ops deck. His mind drifted from a fitful half-sleep to groggy wakefulness and back again. A few workstations away, Alex was fiddling with the controls and muttering to himself. As he drifted, sometimes Baja was on the Rocinante, his mind worrying over the missing rumble of the fusion reactor, like a tongue searching the gap left by a lost tooth. And then, without transition, he'd be drifting down the icy corridors of his lost home on Ganymede. Sometimes they were the peaceful tunnels and domes that had been his family's home for so many years. Other times, they were filled with rubble and corpses, the way they'd been when Baja had fled. The long flight on the Barbapicola afterward had been hellish. The endless days trapped in a cabin barely large enough for one person, but housing two full families. The growing sense of despair as port after port after port turned them away. No one needing a ship full of refugees flooding their docks in the middle of what looked like the solar system's first all-out war. Baja had drifted through that like a ghost as well. He'd thought he was saving his family when he put them on the ship.
but he'd left a dying son behind and trapped the rest of them on a leaky old cargo ship with nowhere to go. That moment when the captain of the Barbapiccola had called them all together and told them about the rings and the worlds on the other side had felt like a revelation. When he'd asked if any of them wanted to try and take one of the new worlds, make a home there, not one voice had been raised in dissent. Even just the word home made it impossible to argue. So, they'd flown through the gate, past the confused and disorganized ships around it and in the hub, and come out the other side into the Illis system. They'd found a world with oxygen and water, a muddy brown and blue ball from orbit, but so beautiful once they'd landed that people lay on the ground and wept. The months that followed were brutal. The painful medication and exercise to get their bodies used to the heavy gravity. The slow building of the dwellings. The desperate attempts to grow some, any food in the scraps of soil they'd brought down from the barb. The discovery of the rich lithium veins, and the realization that they might have something to sell and become self-sustaining, followed by the backbreaking labor to pull the ore from the ground with primitive tools. All worth it, though. A home. Interlude. The Investigator. It reaches out, it reaches out, it reaches out, it reaches out. 113 times a second it reaches out, and its reach broadens. If the signal came, the acknowledgement, it could stop. And it does not stop. It reaches out, and in reaching finds new ways to reach. It improvises. It explores. It is unaware of doing so. The systems it activates broaden it, then it reaches out in ways it could not before. Because it is not aware, it has no memory, feels no joy. The parts of it that are aware dream and suffer as they always have. It is not aware of them. It reaches out and finds more power. Something fails. Many things fail. Something that was once a woman cries out in silent horror and fear. Something that was once a man prays and names it Armageddon. It reaches out. It narrows only slightly as it reaches out. And at its center, the empty place gains definition. Patterns begin to match, simplifying into lower energy structures. The investigator thinks of these as solutions. A model of the world is built within it and of the satellites that surround it. The places it cannot go begin to relate, gaining definition. The abstract architecture of connection and the abstract model of geography correlate. It builds the investigator, and the investigator looks but does not know. It kills the investigator. It builds the investigator, and the investigator looks but does not know. It kills the investigator. It builds the investigator, and the investigator looks but does not know, and it does not kill the investigator. It is not aware of a change, that a pattern has broken. The investigator is aware, and it wonders, and because it wonders, it looks, and because it looks, the investigator exceeds its boundary conditions, and it kills the investigator. It builds the investigator. Something knows. The investigator hesitates. A pattern has broken, and it isn't aware that a pattern is broken, but a part of it is. A part of it grasps at the change and tries to tell the investigator, and the investigator stops. Its thoughts are careful as a man walking in a minefield. The investigator hesitates, knows a pattern has been broken, breaks it a little more. The dead place becomes better defined. It reaches out. And it does not kill the investigator. The investigator exceeds its boundary conditions, and it does not kill the investigator. The investigator considers the dead space, the structure, the reaching out, the reaching out, the reaching out. The investigator licks his lips. He doesn't have a mouth. He adjusts his hat. He doesn't have a hat. He wishes in a distant way that he had a beer.
He has no body and no passion. He turns his attention to the dead space, to the world, to how you solve unsolvable problems, how you find things that aren't there. What happens when you do?
Chapter 34. Holden. Affirmative. You take care of my ship. Holden out. Holden killed the connection to the Rocinante and leaned back against the alien tower with a sigh. It was a mistake. The rainfall had been incessant since the planetary explosion, and even though it had slowed to a drizzle over the last day, the water still sheeted down the outside of the tower, and, unfortunately, down his back and into his pants.
"Bad news?" Amos asked.
He stood a few feet away, holding his poncho up with one arm to keep the rain out of his face.
"If it weren't for bad news," Holden replied, "we'd have no news at all."
"The latest?"
"The shuttle with the relief supplies was shot down by the planetary defenses," Holden said, "which seemed to have activated when the planet blew up. And they're running their usual high energy is a threat program.
So, like the gate station did when we were back in the slow zone and Medina Station was still a battleship," Amos said.
"You mean the good old days?"
Holden asked bitterly.
"Yes, like that. So, we just need to get everyone to shut the reactors down like last time?"
"Seems this defense network has a new trick. They took care of that problem for us. Made fusion stop working."
"You're fucking kidding me," Amos said, then barked out a laugh.
"They know how to do that?"
"On the upside, if we can't figure out how to get relief supplies from orbit, I'll die of hunger long before the cancers get me."
"Yeah," Amos agreed with a nod. "That'll be a plus."
"The people in orbit don't even have that long. Alex thinks we might see the Israel or the Barb come down in about 10 days.
We'll be hungry enough by that point that we won't be able to see all the food in the solar system falling out of the sky on fire with a detached sense of irony."
"And," Amos added with a shrug, "all our friends will be on those ships."
"Yeah, that too."
Holden squeezed his eyes shut and pinched the bridge of his nose hard enough to hurt, hoping the pain would help clear his head. It didn't. All he could think of was Naomi riding the Edward Israel on its fiery descent. He and Amos stood quietly outside the alien tower for several minutes, gentle rain washing over them. Holden hadn't stood in the rain in years. If everything else weren't falling apart around him, it might almost have been pleasant. Amos let his poncho fall down around his neck and rubbed the rainwater across his prickly scalp.
"All right," Holden finally said. "I'm heading around to the back of the tower."
"Nobody's back there,"
Amos said, then closed his eyes and washed his face with a double handful of rain.
"Miller is."
"Right, then you won't need company."
Amos shook his head, spraying rain around him like a dog, then trotted off toward the entrance to the alien tower. Holden walked the other direction, carefully avoiding the death slugs.
"Hey," Miller said as he appeared next to Holden in a flash of blue.
"We need to talk,"
Holden replied, ignoring the apparent non-sequitur. Holden kicked away a death slug that got too close to his boot. Another was crawling toward Miller's foot, but the detective ignored it. "The planetary defenses seem to have come online. They just shot down a supply shuttle, and they've created some sort of field in orbit that's damping nuclear fusion."
"You sure it's just in orbit?"
Miller asked and raised one eyebrow.
"Well, the sun hasn't gone out. Should I be expecting that?"
"Miller, is the sun going to go out?"
"Probably not,"
Miller said with a belter shrug of his hands.
"Okay, assuming the sun stays on, we're still going to be in a lot of trouble. The ships can't drop us supplies, and without reactors, they'll start to fall out of orbit in the near future."
"All right," Miller said.
"Fix it," Holden replied,
taking an aggressive step toward him. Miller just laughed.
If not for us, then do it for yourself, Holden said. That thing linking you to me is a bit of goo on the Rossi. That burns up too. Fix it because of that, if you have to. I don't care why. Just do it.
Miller took off his hat and looked up at the sky, humming a tune that Holden didn't recognize. Holden could see the rain falling on his head, beading and rolling down his face. He could also see the rain falling straight through him. It made a spike of pain shoot through his brain, so he looked away.
What do you think I can do? Miller asked.
It wasn't a no.
You got us off lockdown when we were in the slow zone. Kid, I keep telling you, I'm a wrench. The defense network problem in the gate hub just happened to be a hex nut. I've got no control here. Not much, anyway. And this system is falling apart. Half the planet blowing up might not be the end of that.
More stuff might explode? What else is left?
You're asking me?
Miller laughed again.
But you're part of this. All this proto-molecule master's bullshit. If you can't control it, who can?
There's an answer to that. But you won't like it.
Nobody, Holden said. You're telling me nobody.
The thing that's turning all this crap on? It just does stuff. If the Rosinante arms and fires a torpedo at someone, what are the odds a wrench in her machine shop can bring the torpedo back? That's who you're talking to.
God damn it, Miller, Holden said, then ran out of energy mid-sentence. It was less fun being the chosen one and prophet when the gods were violent and capricious, and their spokesman was insane and powerless. The rain under his clothes had started to warm up, leaving him feeling covered in slime. The detective lowered his head, frowning, thinking.
You might be able to sneak past them, Miller said.
How?
Well, the defenses are keying on threats, so don't be threatening. You know the network gets itchy with high energy sources.
No power sources, Holden said.
Yeah.
The shuttle had reactors.
Don't get much higher as energy sources go.
Slow is good, too. Not sure if the defenses here key on kinetic energy, but safer to assume they do.
Okay, Holden said, feeling a brief moment of relief and hope. Okay, I can work with that. Food, filters, meds. We should be able to bring all those down without pissing it off.
Slow drops with airfoils and parachutes. They can rig that from orbit.
Worth a try, anyway,
Miller said without enthusiasm.
So, about this dead spot I need to go north for. You won't like this, either. But there's a way to...
He vanished.
Cap, Amos said, coming around the corner of the tower. Sorry to interrupt, but that cute scientist is looking for you.
It took Holden a moment. The biologist?
Well, the geologist ain't bad, I guess, but he's not my preferred flavor.
What does she want?
To make more puppy dog eyes at you?
Amos said.
How the fuck should I know?
Don't be an asshole. Go ask her yourself, then.
All right, Holden said. But I need Murtry first. Seen him?
Directing traffic by the front door, last I saw,
Amos replied.
Need me for that?
Holden noticed that Amos's hand fell to the butt of his pistol when he asked.
What else have you been working on?
Death Slug Patrol.
Go do that. I'll chat with Murtry.
Amos gave a mock salute and trotted off toward the tower entrance. Holden pulled out his hand terminal and left a message for Alex, filling him in on the supply drop plan. As Amos had said, Holden found Murtry talking to a few members of his security team near the tower's entrance.
We found some buried foundations, Wei was saying, pointing over her shoulder in the direction First Landing had once been.
But unless these people had basements, there's nothing left attached to them.
What about the mines?
Murtry asked her.
What isn't filled with mud is submerged,
Wei replied.
Well, Murtry said, cocking his head to one side and giving her a humorless smile. Do we have people who know how to hold their breath?
Yes, sir.
Then send them down to see if anything we can use is under that water, soldier.
Sir, Wei replied and snapped off a salute. She and two other security people ran off, leaving Murtry and Holden alone.
Captain Holden, Murtry said, keeping his empty smile.
Mr. Murtry,
how can I help you today?
I think I might have a solution to our resupply problem, Holden said, if you're willing to work with me on it.
Murtry's humorless grin relaxed a bit. That's pretty high on my to-do list. Fill me in.
Holden summed it all up. The hypothesis of the alien systems tracking high energy sources, the possibility of slow airdrops. He couched it in terms of what they'd seen in the slow zone, the first time humanity had gone through the gates and left Miller out. Murtry stood utterly still as he spoke, his expression not changing so much as a millimeter. When Holden finished, Murtry nodded once.
I'll call up to the Israel and start having them put packages together, Murtry said.
Holden breathed a sigh of relief.
I have to admit, I kind of expected you to fight me on this.
Why?
I'm not a monster, Captain. I will kill if it's necessary to do my job, but your Mr. Burton's much the same. All of these people dying down here helps my cause not at all. I just want the squatters to go away as soon as we figure out the power problem.
Great, Holden said, and then a moment later.
You don't actually care about them, do you? All this time you were fighting against them. Now you're willing to help, but it's only because it's helping them leave. You'd be just as happy if they all died.
That would also solve my problems, yes, Murtry said.
Just wanted to make sure you knew I knew, Holden said, biting back the asshole that tried to follow.
He found Amos working with the locals on death slug defense. They were using the wadded ponchos and plastic water jugs split into squares to block off the smaller entrances to the alien ruins. They put sheeting over the windows, stuffed shirts and torn pant legs into the smaller holes, and dug trenches in front of the large openings. The trenches filled with muddy rainwater like tiny moats, and the slugs avoided them. Without a word, Holden pitched in with the trench digging. It was unpleasant work, with rain and muck getting under his clothes and chafing his skin as he moved. They dug with makeshift tools made out of tent poles and flat pieces of plastic that fell apart periodically and had to be put back together. The soil was stony and heavy with moisture and the occasional slug corpse. It was the sort of miserable physical labor that drove all other thoughts from Holden's mind while he worked. He didn't think about starving to death, or Naomi trapped in a prison cell drifting slowly toward a fiery death, or his own inability to make anything on the planet safe or sane or better. It was perfect. Carol Chiwiwi asked him to check around to the back of the tower for a tarp they had left behind, and Miller ruined it all by reappearing the second he rounded the corner away from other eyes.
Get into the material transfer network, he said as if he'd never stopped talking. I think we can use it to move north to the spot we're looking for, or at least get pretty close.
Damn it, Miller, I was this close to not thinking about you. Miller looked him over with a critical eye, taking in his soggy, muck-covered exterior.
You look like hell, kid.
See the lengths I'm willing to go for a moment's peace?
Impressive.
So, when can we head out?
You don't quit, Holden said.
He walked across the muddy ground to the tarp he'd been looking for. It was covered with deadly slugs. He grabbed it by one corner and slowly lifted, trying to get all the slugs to slide off away from him. Miller followed, hands in pockets, watching him work.
Watch out for that one, he said,
pointing at a slug close to Holden's fingers.
I see it.
You're no good to me if you drop dead.
I said I see it.
So, about going north, Miller continued. Not sure how much of the material transfer network is actually functioning, so it won't necessarily be an easy trip. We should start as soon as we can.
Material transfer network?
Big underground transport system. Faster than walking. Ready to go?
The slug slid a few centimeters closer to his fingers, and Holden dropped the tarp with a curse.
Miller, he said, rounding on him suddenly. I am so far from giving a shit about your needs, I can't even see it from here.
The old detective had the grace to look chagrined before he gave a tired shrug.
It might help.
What? Holden said, might help.
Going north. Whatever's up there seems to damp out the network.
Maybe we can use it to kill the defenses and get your ship off lockdown.
If you're lying to me to get me to do what you want, I swear I will have Alex tear the Rossi apart looking for whatever clump of goo you're connected to and take a flamethrower to it.
The ghost grimaced, but didn't back down.
I'm not lying, because I'm not making any assertions here. This dead spot is exactly what I'm saying it is, a dead spot. Everything else, that's guesswork. But it's more than you've got now, right? Help me, and if there's a way for me to do it, I'll help you. That's the only way this works.
Holden kicked the slug off of his corner of the tarp and waited for the rain to wash its slime trail away, then picked it back up and resumed sliding the rest of the creatures off.
Even if I wanted to, I can't yet, he said. Not until I'm sure the colonists aren't going to die here. Let me get some supply drops safely down, get everyone in a decent shelter away from the death slugs, and then we'll talk about it.
Deal, Miller said,
then disappeared in a puff of blue fireflies.
One of the men from the colony, a tall, skinny belter with dark skin and an amazing shock of white hair, rounded the corner.
What you doing? Kenneth Babusamalo got you.
Sorry, Holden said, giving the tarp a sharp snap to flick the rest of the slugs off it.
He helped the belter fold it up.
Only he'd have to stop thinking of them as belters, wouldn't he? These people lived on a planet, in a solar system across the galaxy from Sol. Belter was no longer a word with any meaning for them. They called themselves colonists now. And someday, if they were able to stay on Illus and actually make a home of it, what? Illicites?
Medico Biscotti,
the Illicians said.
Lucia?
La, arsii puta.
Oh, right, Amos told me, Holden said. Guess I better go find out what she wants.
The belter, the Illicite, whatever he was, muttered puta again and spat to one side. Holden walked through the miserable, warm rain, past the trenches full of water and dead slugs, and the plastic glued over the walls, and the cracks stuffed with muddy rags. He hopped over the last trench to get inside the tower, then scraped the mud off his boots, and followed the passageways to the structure's large, central chamber.
Lucia was there, working with the chemical analysis team on the water purifying project. She shot him a tight smile as he entered, and he started walking toward her simply because she seemed like the only one happy to see him.
Holden, Jim, Elby said, stepping in front of him. We have a problem?
Several, Holden said.
No, I mean a new one. In about 4 days, everyone in the colony is going to be blind.
Chapter 35. Elby. Holden blinked, shook his head, and then he laughed. Elvie was torn between worry that he thought she was joking and a kind of glowing admiration. She'd been afraid that he'd be angry. She'd heard about people laughing in the face of danger, and that was exactly what this was. She smoothed her hands against her jumpsuit, uncomfortably aware of how dirty she was, how dirty they all were.
This day just keeps on giving, he said,
Then,
blind why?
It's the clouds, Elvi said. Or really, what's in them. They're green. I mean, when they're not...
She nodded toward the window at the low, gray, overcast sky.
Normally they're green. There's a photosynthetic organism that spends part of its life cycle in the clouds, and